Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, January 22nd, 2016. It's just after 3:30 UTC as we're recording this time. I'm Sam Minter, and as usual with me is Yvonne Bo. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello. Drill, baby, drill. No?
Yeah. That's about right.
Yeah.
So our agenda today is basically we're going to do our usual election stuff. The Republicans have stuff going on. The Democrats have stuff going on. We're 11 days from Iowa. Then we'll do a lightning round with other stuff that may be going on. And that's basically it. That's basically our plan.
Yeah.
So anything before we dive into those profound topics, anything exciting going on with you, Yvonne?
Well, I want to know what you're planning on doing, because you threatened me with something about that you're going to do.
Well, all it is that one of our listeners, as Sarah Palin was endorsing Trump, requested specifically that in his words, I would like to request that you read a small passage, your favorite, of the Palin endorsement on your show.
Just a passage.
So and there.
I thought at first he said to read the whole thing.
No. We don't have to read the whole thing.
Okay.
Although, you know, hey, if you want me to.
It might take 20 minutes, but... There was an article with plenty of excerpts that I've seen a few, you know, that just, you know, summarize the madness.
Yeah, so we're, and I've listened to parts of it. Anyway, I guess we can just, I don't know. Anything else before we jump in?
What's going on? I don't know. No. Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, that's all. I haven't even traveled anywhere.
So boring.
I know.
It's just all the usual stuff here. It's all like getting back to the routine. My broken foot still hurts, but you know, I can get around. So
amputated.
But you know, otherwise, you know, the kids are playing, the things are happening, the school happening, this homework happening. I'm going to work. You know,
usual. You don't think we should amputate the foot?
You know, I've sometimes thought of it, but no.
Okay.
I think we can
that could have been fun if we did it on the air.
Yeah, I'll just get out a butter knife and start.
You know, it's gonna take a long time with a butter knife. Can I be honest? It probably won't do the job very well.
No,
not particularly. No, not really.
Oh well. Anyway, so since there's nothing exciting going on in either of our lives right now, let's take a quick break and then we'll jump it right in. And since you already mentioned Sarah Palin and Donald Trump, we'll start off with the Republicans and we'll start off with Sarah Palin.
Ooh. Who?
Right after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620, and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs.
Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
Come on, baby. Let's do the twist.
Well, they got a new dance, and it goes like this.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Looking around at all of you, you hard-working Iowa families, you farm families and teachers and teamsters and cops and cooks, you rock and rollers and holy rollers, all of you who work so hard, you full-time moms, you with the hands that rock the cradle, you all make the world go round, and now our cause is won.
You know, that reference to the hand that rocks the cradle is just so wrong. I mean, I don't know, all I get is this image of like, there's a...
Boing, boing. Technical difficulties. Boing, boing. Okay, Yvonne, you were saying something about Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
It's the movie. Actually, you know, they had this damn movie where they had the nanny. It was called The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Tries to kill the whole family, you know? And she goes and she makes this Hand That Rocks the Cradle thing. And I'm like thinking, oh, great, beautiful. Apparently, we're all going to be killed. Great.
Yeah, I've never seen that movie.
Yes.
There's some other, like, older reference to Hand That Rocks the Cradle that I guess is more benign, but...
Most of the references, I think, that if I go right now into Google and, like, look up The Hand Rocks the Cradle...
As we're both Googling furiously.
Cradle is that! That's what comes up first! Okay?
So here's... The movie was a reference to a poem by William Ross Wallace that praises motherhood as the preeminent force for change in the world, published in 1865.
The problem is that it was superseded by a movie that basically about a crazed, deranged woman that went out on a murderous rampage.
You remember the video during the 2008 campaign of Sarah Palin in Alaska making some statement about the campaign while in the background behind her, someone was stuffing turkeys into a machine that killed them and pulled them apart.
I did not recall this like right now.
Yeah, it was a Thanksgiving thing and she was making some sort of statement, but right behind her was it was like this big funnel that you shove the turkey in the top of and then it just like, it kills them, it rips them to shreds, it does something or other. And it was just happening right behind her while she was like, ah, ba 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 ba, about like her and John McCain. Boing, boing. Technical difficulties. Technical difficulties. Technical difficulties. Boing, boing.
Okay, I ran a test call on my side to Skype, and it went...
Yeah, no, there's something wrong with my network here.
Okay, so now you fucked up your network. So there you go.
Well, I didn't.
Apparently, we're two geniuses over here.
I didn't change a damn thing, but you know, yeah, we were talking, and we're recording again, by the way. We were talking the other day about, like, the unreliability of fucking Wi-Fi networks.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I've been thinking about this, and obviously it's not a subject that we brought up, but now, obviously, we are faced with it. Wi-Fi sucks, okay?
Yes.
I mean, it's one of these technologies that at first it was great, beautiful, and honestly, it's just, as it stands, in its current form, just flat out sucks.
Yeah, when we were talking the other day, you added an extender to get to the reaches of your house, two extenders. Now, I've had the same problem where, you know, my router and my Wi-Fi hotspot are in my home office upstairs in our house, and there's some corners of downstairs, namely part of our living room, where it's spotty. Okay, so I know, okay, I'm going to get another extender. But right now, my computer, which is, even though it's a desktop, I had it connected by the Wi-Fi, is maybe 4 feet from the damn router.
And you're having problems.
And I'm having problems.
Yep. I mean, that's one of the things that's just really fucking annoying. I mean, I'm like, you know, I'm standing right there by the fucking router and I can't get a signal. I will tell you this, that after I did that, I wound up buying one of those, like, power line Ethernet things.
I have one of those for, like, I have a bunch of basically the audio video equipment for our home entertainment center. I have all of that connected through a power line network from upstairs, which works in that room a lot more reliably than the Wi-Fi does. So I don't know. But it's like, I don't know. It's like I and gone again.
Boing, boing. Technical difficulties. Technical difficulties. Technical difficulties. Boing, boing.
Hello.
So now I plugged in the damn wire. I'm on a wired network now. We'll see if this improves anything. I turned off the Wi-Fi on my computer. I plugged the cable into the back of the computer. And we're doing a really awesome job talking about the Republicans right now, but I'm mad at my network.
Well, you know, I have tried, you know, where I have my computer to actually, I have consistently had my Wi-Fi off. Yeah. And I am just directly plugged in. I just don't
know. And I, you know, and I've done that before. There are a couple things that, like, I don't know. There are a couple reasons I was switching it to Wi-Fi, even though I'm like, the cord was like a foot away. There's no problem plugging it in. But, you know, I'd had it on the Wi-Fi, but like my Wi-Fi network, and it seems like it's been getting worse.
Have more people around you boosting their signal, causing more interference with yours, and so it's...
Supposedly the 5 gigahertz network is better at that kind of crap.
Bullshit. I've got the fucking 5... I've had just as many fucking problems with 5 gigahertz as with the other ones. It's all bullshit. Yeah,
well, you know, a few months ago, I bought a brand new router. Because I was like, you know, I've got an old router. Maybe it's just like it's old. It's got issues. There's new technology. It's better. I'll buy a brand new one. I got the one that the wire cutter recommended. And I'm like, okay, we'll be all set. And it seemed like it was better for a little while. But then, like, lately, it's just been going to shit. And it's like constantly having issues with connectivity. And at first I was like, okay, it's all about range. It's all about like the downstairs is too far away and I need to get the extender. But just like in the last week to 2 weeks, I've been like, there's something else going on. Maybe this router I got is just shit.
It could be.
And it's not working.
It could be.
Even though supposedly it got all the reviews as being one of the best ones out there, blah, 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 whatever, you know. Shall we try to get back to Sarah Palin?
Anyway, yes, and you know, it's like, so the hand that rocks the cradle. Yes, beautiful reference. Lovely. I'm sure that, you know, everybody out there in America, you know.
I'm sure she'd spent lots of time reading the 1865 poem.
Yeah, of course. You know, this is like scared half of us shitless, you know, by her thinking, obviously, you know, because I know that that's what the fuck she was referring to anyway. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm like, you know, what else is she saying that nonsense?
Okay, so here's another one. And I hope our listener, Mark, is appreciative of my interpretive readings of Sarah Palin here. Because a weak-kneed capitulator-in-chief has decided that America will lead from behind, and he who would negotiate deals with the skills of a community organizer, maybe organizing a neighborhood tea, yeah, well, he deciding that America would apologize and is part of the deal as the enemy sends a message to the rest of the world that they capture and we kowtow and we apologize and then we bend over and say, thank you, enemy. Here's, by the way, I'm taking some highlights off of a compilation that was on Huffington Post.
Highlights?
Lowlights? The title of this article was 12 Things Sarah Palin Just Said in What We Can Only Assume Is Real Life by Nick Wing. And he just pulled out he actually pulled out 12 paragraphs out of this whole thing was like 20 minutes long or something.
Saw the live video. The whole event lasted like an hour and a half, in which about 45 minutes of it, it seemed like was Donald Trump just letting everybody just wait, mm-hmm. Okay, standing around, all right? I mean, he went on and he did his usual like spiel, and I mean, I fast-forwarded through it because it's just really – hard.
I haven't watched more than like – 30 seconds at a shot of this.
I tried. I really did try. Okay. And it's just to start off with you know, Trump going with his usual bullshit, like, and says, you know, because I'm building that fucking wall. He makes a reference to that stupid wall every time that he's going to make Mexico pay for and says it over and over. Ha ha ha. You know, and then you know, he says, then he starts going through poll numbers.
Mm-hmm.
He starts just going through poll after poll number. It's like I think I swear to God, he must have spent like more than half his time talking about how good he's doing.
All right.
I'm sorry. You go to an event for some guy just to tell you how good he's doing? He doesn't talk about how he's, you know, he makes some references to this idiotic stuff about how he's supposed to fix the country a little bit, repeating the same bullshit lines, then talks about the latest poll numbers, and then you know, goes and does some really lame introduction to, you know, whack job over here. it's just, and then, you know, she goes off for a while, and I am just, it's a train wreck. I mean, the whole thing. But I guess, well, here's the thing.
Yvonne, how about the rest of us? Right-winging, bitter, clinging, proud clingers of our guns, our God, and our religions, and our Constitution. Tell us what we're not read enough? Yeah, coming from the establishment. Tell us that we're not read enough.
I don't know what to say to something like that. I mean, you know, what can you say to something like that?
Well, look, here's the thing, is that, you know, as much as sort of in the broader universe, everybody's sort of come on the bandwagon of, oh yeah, Sarah Palin, what a train wreck. There is a certain portion of the American public that still loves her.
I guess. Sure.
And within that, and that's an audience that Trump wanted. And apparently that's an audience that Cruz wanted too. And so the fact that Palin ended up backing Trump instead of Cruz is actually a significant blow to Cruz, which it's hard for me to imagine. I'm like, because from my point of view, it's like, I don't want her anywhere near me. But, you know, in this bizarro world where the Republican race is Cruz versus Trump, Sarah Palin's endorsement means something.
I guess. Honestly, that's still a question to me, obviously. I think, well, to anybody, honestly. Look, she made the endorsement. I was reading through how a whole bunch of people on her who were fans of her, yeah, on her Facebook fan page were going and being severely pissed off.
Because they wanted her to go for Cruz.
Or just in general for just endorsing Trump.
Mm, yeah. No, I can see that. But
And so the question is whether it's, you know,
whether she brings along her people or whether she pisses them off by doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so hard looking at the particular group of people who are Sarah Palin fans to start with. I have to admit, I don't have a good sense of their thought processes.
I don't think they have a lot of thought processes to make sense of. I was reading somebody that this whole thing, I think it was Rush Limbaugh himself that was saying this.
Yeah.
That what he and, you know, Rush usually, you know, he's analyzing the Republicans, so he's not, so, which is, you know, his analysis is probably a little better on that than some other stuff. And what he said was that what Trump and Palin are touching on is that conservatism right now isn't so much about actual policies, that it's about an attitude,
right? And this is also, I mean, we've talked for years about the divisions among Republicans, among conservatives, because part of the problem here is that, okay, there is sort of an actual conservative political mindset, but Trump and Palin do not embody that
at all.
No. Like
what they are is simply an attitude of hatred against the left. That's all it is. It's not about holding a position. It's simply being against what they perceive to be on the left and what it stands for, or the left of them. Okay, all right? Because it's like the same conversation I was having with somebody who was way on the left, that I said, listen, you know, anybody who is not on your edge of the spectrum is a right winger, okay? And it's the same thing for these guys. Well, anybody who is not at the tip of this right wing is the left.
But even then, the thing is, and this goes for both Palin and Trump, if you actually analyze their views, yes, some of them are right wing, some of them are more leftish, some of them, right, they're all over the place, because there's no actual ideological background behind it.
what is perceived as the left that is in control. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's it. There is no ideology. I will add to that.
It's really anti-establishment because they're both going against the establishment of the Republican Party, too.
Well, I think they're going after it because they do not support, okay, being just anti. There's no compromise, right?
Right.
There is no, you know, you just want to be against those guys, okay? And so if you're just against those guys, there can be no common ground. You know, we can't think about things the same way. It has to be whatever they are. You're against it. Period. Knee jerk. No analysis. No discussion. Nothing. Just whatever. Just like, for example, being against Obamacare, for example. I mean, Obamacare is a fucking Republican damn health plan. And
the Republicans from 15 years ago. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're against it. Knee jerk, you know, directly. No analysis, nothing. Because that would be, you know.
Well, and what's, you know, just to be clear, there are principled objections to Obamacare.
Yes.
And there you can make very rational, cogent arguments about why this particular approach to dealing with healthcare is bad in ways X, Y, and Z, but that's not what
they're doing.
Yeah.
That's not what they're doing by any stretch. And so so you've got a Republican Party right now that really has been co-opted by this force, and so if you have any real ideology, I mean, in terms of what you stand for, as if you don't stand for just being against, you know, them, you're not with them. That's it. Simple as that.
So now let's talk about a few of the other dynamics that have been going on here on the Republican side. So besides Palin's endorsement, and maybe we'll sprinkle in a few more quotes throughout the rest of the show.
Palin? Is it Palin?
Palin? Whatever. anyway, we also had an escalation of the Trump versus Cruz battle. I mean, we talked a little bit about that last week.
Oh, yeah, they're at war.
We recorded this before the debate, right?
Yes.
Yes, last week. So, but in any case, both in the debate and moving forward, the two of them have moved from sort of, you know, this truce where neither one was attacking the other to, yes, they're now at all-out war.
Oh, they're all-out war.
And so this is what, of course, everybody else lower down in the Republican polls has been hoping for all along, that, you know, they'll knock each other out and give somebody else an opportunity. And meanwhile, the second tier, though, the Bushes and the Rubios and Kasich and all of these guys are spending all of their time attacking each other as well, because the strategy here, as far as I can tell, is, you know, the sort of establishment lane folks are fighting amongst themselves to try to make it so only one of them survives, and then that one can go on and fight the survivor of Cruz versus Trump.
Right.
And I don't know whether this strategy is going to work or not, but it seems to be what they're trying, because none of them are actually going after Trump directly.
Yep.
And one of the things that has been the big buzz over the last maybe 48 hours is a bunch of quote unquote traditional establishment Republican types, like Bob Dole and Orrin Hatch, and I think there have been a couple others too, but those were the biggest names, have basically come out and says, you know, if it comes down to Cruz versus Trump, I'd prefer Trump. Because they really hate Cruz.
Oh, man.
And so what you've got is a bunch of establishment folks seeming to be like, okay, if it's going to be Trump, it's going to be Trump. Let's rally around Trump. There was an article, I forget if it was the Washington Post or New York Times or whoever, talking about the Republican donor class as well, the establishment donor class, who's sort of been sitting on the sidelines ever since Bush started falling off a cliff, saying they're trying to figure out how they can ingratiate themselves to Trump now. You know, even though he's like, I don't want your money. And so what we have, you know, we've been saying all along, like, and this goes along with the sort of the party decides kind of mindset, where the party establishment picks a winner and throws their resources behind them. And then, yeah, that's what happens. And what we've seen here is they've been sitting on the sidelines, like I said, ever since Bush started to take a nosedive way back almost a year ago. And they haven't been picking a winner until right now. It seems like maybe they might be saying, you know, okay, if Trump's the guy, Trump's the guy. Let's do that.
Well, I mean,
I don't think we're quite there yet. There are hints that that might be happening, where basically these guys, rather than, you know, putting in an all out effort to stop Trump by picking one of these other guys, Rubio or Bush or somebody, and going all in
Of course. I mean, they're just picking out a guy who looks like a winner. Because the reality is what we said before. Nobody's going to drop out before Iowa. I mean, right now they're all going to go all the way then.
Although I've heard a couple rumors about Huckabee maybe deciding to try to influence the Trump versus Cruz thing by throwing his few percent towards one of them.
Yeah, but come on, fucking Huckabee. I mean, whatever. I mean, you know, it's another fucking guy, another on the lunatic scale. You know, Huckabee had 2 points. In the Iowa caucus, he's got 2 points.
Right.
Give me a fucking break. Who gives a fuck? I mean, Bush is like almost like, you know, as five. Yeah, two. Talk about Mr. Irrelevance.
Yes, I would agree there. So, like, even if some of these guys drop off,
arson endorsing like Cruz, well, then, you know, then I'd be, well, okay, that could, and now you're talking, but Huckabee?
Yeah, no.
Maybe Santorum's going to fucking endorse one of them. You know, what the hell? He's going to throw his 0.2% polling number that I'm looking at average right now. I'm really going to tilt the race.
Nationally?
Actually,
Iowa, yes, he's 1.1.
Yes. Yes, nationally, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, and looking at Real Clear Politics, of course, here.
Yes, looking at Real Politics, yes.
Because, again, the pollster average looks a little bit different. Yeah, look.
In Iowa, he has 1.1%, yes. Okay, there you go. Yeah, oh, yeah. He's really going to tilt the field.
Well, and along those lines, I since I mentioned pollster, I had to bring it up. You know, if you compare them, Real Clear Politics in Iowa has, let's see, where are we? Trump at 29, Cruz at 26.4, Rubio at 11.4, Carson at 8.5 is their top four. The top four by pollster are Trump at 29.1, Cruz at 26.4, Rubio at 12.9, and Carson at 7.8. So same top four, slightly different numbers. Anyway... you'll notice in those, Trump is once again ahead in Iowa.
Yes.
Just by a little bit, but he's once again ahead in Iowa.
But he is ahead, yeah.
And he's got a huge lead in New Hampshire still. So, you know, a lot of these people that we're sort of banking on, okay, the way we get out of this, the way we do something about Trump is Cruz wins Iowa, and therefore Trump starts looking like he's not a winner.
Happen.
It may happen. And, you know, we talked before, like, in the delegate race, it may be a tie, but, you know, people are still going to look at, well, who won? Even if they win by, like,
they
five votes.
The same shit, right.
You know, if you remember the margin between Romney and Santorum in Iowa in 2012 was something like 10 votes. It was extremely close. But the winner got all the fucking attention.
Right.
And the way that worked out, for those who don't remember, was actually kind of interesting. Romney was declared winner on election night.
Yeah,
got all the attention, moved on based on that win. They then did a recount, found out that Santorum actually won by a handful of votes. But it was.
But nobody had given a shit.
But nobody cared at that point.
You know, nobody cared.
Even though the reality is, I mean, hell, if you have a contest like that and the result is within a few dozen votes, it's a fucking tie, okay?
Right.
And then, in the end, Ron Paul got the most delegates because of the way the delegate stuff worked in Iowa. But that wasn't clear for months. So we've got Trump ahead. We've got Trump ahead in Iowa, just barely. We've got Trump way ahead in New Hampshire. All the further states, he's still way ahead. So everybody who's thinking not Trump is still banking on situations where all of these other guys, all of the anti-Trump, anti-Cruz stuff somehow gets consolidated. And Trump and Cruz knock each other out. And one of these other guys, Rubio or somebody, comes from behind and manages to do this.
Right.
And yeah. But, you know, even like Nate Silver at 538, there were a couple articles in the last couple days where he's finally sort of saying, okay, maybe I've been underestimating Trump a little bit, and maybe I'm going to increase his odds a little bit in our estimates. And he's not necessarily saying he was wrong before, but what he's saying is it's becoming clear that the establishment is not coming to anybody's rescue here. Because again, what we talked about earlier, the reason to be the biggest reason to be skeptical of Donald Trump, there are others too, but the biggest reason was the assumption that all of the might of the establishment Republican Party would do everything they could to stop him. And it's just not looking like that's happening. They're sitting on their thumbs going like, we don't know what to do about this.
We don't know what to do about it. Right. They don't know what to do about it. They have no clue what the fuck to do.
And
they really don't. They don't want him, but they don't know what to do either.
Right. And yeah. And just like it has been for the last couple months, you know, you expect, like, if they really didn't want him, you'd have some of them saying, you know, if he's the nominee, I'm bolting. I'm not going to vote for him. I'm not going to do that. I may not vote for Hillary, but I'm not going to vote for Trump.
Right.
But there have been very, very few people of like the Republican elected official or important people who've actually come out and said that. And now more and more of them are saying,
maybe not on the record, but there's a lot of important Republicans that off the record have been, you know, saying a lot of that. They won't go on the record against Trump, though.
Right. And look, if you want to, if they wanted to stop him, they got to actually say the stuff in public, yeah, where people can see.
But they're scared to say it because, you know, the thing is,
because anyone who goes after him gets smacked.
Gets annihilated.
Yeah, because he has annihilated every single person that's gone after him so far.
Right.
And, you know, there's, and it's continued. Like we said, Cruz was beating him in Iowa and he smacks him down with this Canadian thing. And all of a sudden, Trump's ahead again.
Right.
And by the way, we sort of dismissed that last time around, like, of course he's eligible, blah, blah, blah. I've been reading some more about that over the time. There are some decent legal arguments about why he might not be. I mean, they're stupid, you know, there's actually some legal precedent that could go either way, blah, blah, blah. It has actually never been tested in court, blah, blah, blah. Now, the reason why everybody says it's slam dunk is that there's a lot of good reasons why to believe that if it did go to court, they'd rule in Cruz's favor. But actually, more realistically, what is probably the case is if it went to court before the election, it'd be thrown out for lack of standing or something of those sorts, and basically said, you know, this is only something that can be decided by courts after he's actually elected. Not before, which is kind of a dumbass thing to do, but apparently that's what the situation is. There's also some stuff I've read that said that basically, look, in actuality, what would happen is that the it's not going to be the courts who decide. The arbiter is actually Congress when they receive the Electoral College votes. The procedure to accept or deny the votes that come in is up to Congress. So if Congress wants to determine that that some of the electoral votes are invalid, it's Congress that does that when in late December after the election, or December 10th or something. I forget exactly the date.
Interesting. Okay.
And come on. Yeah, right. Like if Cruz wins, the Republican Congress is really going to say, nah. Although they do hate him.
Yeah.
They do hate him. But what the fuck would they do instead? I mean, you'd essentially be precipitating a constitutional crisis here.
Would you? I mean, don't they have like the right to go and like, the electors are there and like, they could, do something else?
Well, by the time it gets to Congress, the electors have already voted. So if they were basically if they reject the winner, then nobody has a majority. And then Congress has to pick from the top three or something like that. Three electoral vote getters, by the way, right. Not popular vote. And so basically you end up in a situation where Congress ends up just picking a president. And you're in completely uncharted waters once you get to the details of that. I mean, some of the procedures are laid out in the Constitution, but there's a lot, especially if you get into weird deadlock situations, that just is undefined.
Interesting.
Anyway, or you could get into, where you're doing multiple ballots and you're doing this and you're doing that. There have been, like, the election of 1800 was a freaking mess because there was an electoral college, no majority and blah, blah, blah. It has happened, but it's a freaking mess. And anyway, that's probably not going to happen. So.
No. Damn.
Another thing that came out. There was a before we take a break and move on to Democrats, there was an analysis that was I tweeted it earlier with Trump's foreign policy and going into the details of Trump's foreign policy. It was in Politico, just to get this. Politico, published January 20th by Thomas Wright. The title is Trump's 19th Century Foreign Policy. And they basically, first of all, they take on the notion that I've even said a couple times that, Trump doesn't really believe anything. He's just picking what he thinks will influence things and get him there, and then who knows what he'll do after. But apparently, at least on foreign policy, there's been a lot of consistency in his views. And it basically matches sort of the pre-World War II or even late 1800s isolationist strain of foreign policy that's all about, getting, America shouldn't be all over the world doing stuff involved everywhere and should basically, eliminate ourselves from all of those entanglements and those kinds of things. And actually... To be honest, I look at some of that and I'm like, okay, I can actually agree with some of that. But apparently he's pretty, far out
of,
on that.
Speaking of that, that was part of Sarah Palin's speech.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me get to that section.
The Rand Paul part where, here you go. Let me say something really positive about one of those individuals, Rand Paul. I'm going to tell you about that libertarian streak in him that is healthy because he knows you only go to war if you're determined to win the war and you quit footing the bill for these nations who are oil rich. We're paying for some of their skirmishes that have been going on for centuries where they're fighting each other and yelling Allah Akbar, calling jihad on each other's heads forever and ever. Like I said before, let them duke it out and let Allah sort it out.
Okay, can I be honest? Isn't that what fucking Obama's doing in the first place?
No, not entirely.
No?
He's actually still pretty involved.
Okay, but wait. He's been drawing down
Yes. In terms of that, you're right. I mean, he's been a lot more hands off than other folks have wanted to. And this is one of the places where there's a complete disconnect within the Republicans, because you've got, on the one hand, these ultra hawks
right.
who want to bomb everywhere.
Right.
And apparently, Trump is actually one of the ones who's like...
What did he say? Something about, you know, sea of sand glows or something?
No, that was Cruz. That was Cruz.
That's what I said, Cruz.
Yeah, okay. Well, and but we actually, I remember during one of the debates that we actually did the live commentary on, Trump was talking about Syria and saying, hey, if the Russians want to get involved, let them, you know? And I'm like, yeah that's what we've been saying.
But the point is that he's saying how Obama's policy is so stupid, while at the same time he's criticizing him for not being involved, and then saying the fact let Trump, you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yes.
This is the whole point that, I mean, these guys have no ideology whatsoever. They just want to say they're against them, even though they're saying something that, to a lot of extent, is what Obama has been trying to do. But they're so stupid, they don't even understand what he's doing, to therefore understand that what they're saying is what he's doing, assholes! Right.
And the other strain of the foreign policy, by the way, is time after time after time, Trump has said things that are basically showing admiration for the techniques of dictators and strongmen.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Because it's all about, well, at least they're strong.
Right. Strength.
Including, of course, his comments on Putin. But also, it's been more general than that. I mean, he's and there was another article that was going around, and I didn't tweet this one and don't have it in front of me and didn't read much beyond the headline. But basically, that was going on looking at some, there were a couple polls that like tried to dive into what the motivation of Trump supporters are. And the thing that correlates more than any other factor, more than racism, more than education, more than economics, is how authoritarian people like governments.
Yep.
You know, and the people who really like an authoritarian government that says, this is it, this is what you do, they love Trump.
Yep. That's what that's I saw that article as well. Isn't it wonderful? All right. Well, anything else on the
Republican side? Let's
all right, let's take a break.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about Democrats back after this. Bring me the elephant. Bring me the elephant. Bring me the elephant. Bring me the elephant. Bring me the elephant.
Information.
Okay, we are back. So Democrats.
Now, Clinton's gonna fucking win. Listen, this I know it's like it's good fodder and shit and whatever and stuff, and I get it. We gotta say something, and it makes it interesting, and ba 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 ba. Yeah. Whatever. Seriously,
Clinton is gonna win.
Yeah,
you know. As we've always said, unless Clinton fucks it up.
Right.
Clinton can fuck it up. Bernie can't do anything to win, but Clinton can certainly fuck it up.
Completely fuck up. Right. And I don't see it happening.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I agree with you. And we talked about this last week, and I talked about the delegate math and some other things. Yeah, the 8% head start Clinton already has. But here's the thing. You know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the Clinton camp underestimated Bernie Sanders and they were sort of leaving him alone. And now they're going on the warpath and that, you know, they're really going after Sanders in the last week or so. It started a little bit before last week's debate and has accelerated since then. I think
you're paying too much fucking attention to him.
I think this is a completely asinine strategy on their part.
I totally agree.
Because what's happening here, and I tweeted this during the debate, but I think it's accelerated afterwards. Every single time Clinton or the Clinton camp attacks Sanders, they elevate him and make her look weak.
Yes, I totally agree. I 100% agree.
I mean, and look, there are, you know, a lot of areas where, you know, people sympathize with Sanders. I mean, and even Hillary Clinton supporters often like a lot of what Sanders says and just think, you know, but Hillary's more realistic and more blah, blah, blah.
I'm exactly on that camp.
You know, and so when she goes after him and attacks him specifically for some of the views that are sort of the views of the Democratic base, you know, she's getting some of the...
It's just stupid. Like, she, right now, it's
yeah,
just
she's getting some of those people who are actually on her side right now and making... But,
I think
but
why you're not getting attacking? Pissed off, but it's just annoying. It just... Because it makes no sense. It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, you could see it possibly as a strategy of if she already had this nailed and she was trying to, you know, brush up her centrist stuff for the general election. But in the short term, you know, no, we're still in the primary cycle. And what you're doing right now is unnecessarily pissing off a bunch of Democrats.
Who you want? Right.
You know, and like some of who already support you and you might be driving some of those away. But also, you know, you're going to have to make nice with the Sanders people at some point.
Yeah.
You know, just like Clinton and Obama made peace after Obama won. You know, Clinton is going to need those Sanders people.
Absolutely.
And so
there's no reason to be on any damn warpath about this.
Yeah. And it's one
make any sense.
It's one thing to sort of point out the differences. I mean, they were having a very nice substantive back and forth on policy issues until about the last week and a half. And then, you know, the Clinton team's gone nuts on it. And I mean, they are still mostly focused on policy, but there have been some unfair attacks. There have been some places where they're just mischaracterizing his views. They're, you know, one example that, you know, has come up a couple times is, you know, he wants single payer health care or Medicare for all. And in order to do so, you know, taxes would be raised.
Yep.
And so Hillary Clinton went after him hard on, you know, you're going to raise taxes to do this, blah, blah, blah. And that is true. However, if Sanders actually got his plan, which would never happen, by the way, just to be clear.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, there's
but
no way to get it
if he got his plan and it went through the way he's designed it, yes, taxes would be raised, but you would also eliminate private insurance premiums. And on net, most people would end up paying less.
Yep.
Net. You know, but of course, taxes would be higher.
Right.
And so that was like, okay. And there are a lot of reasons to think if it actually happened, it wouldn't play out that way and things would change, blah, blah, blah. But the point was, Hillary was intentionally ignoring part of the picture to make him look bad. And it's like, okay, I know politics is not beanbag, as they say, but... You know,
it's just an attack that doesn't make any sense, especially because Hillary advocated for this plan 20 years ago in the first place.
Well, and of course, her point is she learned better. She learned that, yeah, that might be nice, but we have to live within reality. And if we aim for the moon, we fall down.
She could say that.
Well, and she kind of has. I mean, like, a lot of this seems
actually,
to be...
I did hear her say that, actually, on on something I was reading.
Yeah, she has essentially said that. I mean, but what it actually appears like is... I mean, my tweet was like, okay, Hillary, we all get it. You have PTSD from what happened in the 90s to your healthcare plan.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean... But, like, at the same time, her message is all like, you may want this, but you'll have to settle for that. That's not what the base wants to hear. It may be true, but that's not what the base wants to hear. The base loves hearing from Sanders.
Well, I don't know about that. Can I be... Look, it's part of the base. Look, there's a big part of the Democratic base, which is centrist.
That's... Yeah, I mean, it's not what's traditionally called the base. The base are traditionally the
no, I get that, but I think look, when Clinton won in the 90s, the base of the Democratic a party changed substantially. Okay. Whereas in the 80s, it was, you know, extremely far on the left. It really, a lot of it moved, it moved a lot more to the center.
Yeah.
Okay. Than it really is. And the reality is that if you want to win the Democratic nomination, I think it's far more important to be closer to the center than being actually far on the left.
I think that's an iffy proposition. You may be right in the end, but I think there are definitely a variety of constituencies in the Democratic Party. They're not quite as divided as the Republicans are, but you've definitely, I mean, Bernie Sanders shows there is a fairly substantial group of Democrats.
And he's still not in the majority is my point.
No,
I mean,
he is not.
My point is that if you look at the surveys, it shows that, you know, look, consistently over 60% of the people are supporting Hillary, and everybody knows that she's not a raving left winger.
Over 50% anyway.
Over 50%. And she's not a raving left winger.
Yeah. Although there's a nice part of, you know, things that say, you know, she really is. She's just recognizes her limitations. And I think that, and that's one of the things that I'm saying too, is it's not even about the left wing versus the center versus the whatever. It's also just the, you know, it's easy to get excited about, here's all the things we want. We're going to go get them. We're going to go get them. Yes, 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 yes. It's harder to get excited about, here's all the things we want, but we have to be realistic, and maybe we're going to get like this part of that, and we move incrementally and gradually.
Well, I kind of like that. Can I be honest? I like that shit.
I understand, but like,
I mean, I'm sorry, but you know what?
But in terms of people getting excited, it's hard to get people excited over a message of limitations.
I guess. Well, shit. Well, of course, the new message that I heard from Hillary this week was also, and actually, I think I heard a little bit of Bernie today, this week as well, is more embracing of actually Obama, which they had been not really doing.
Oh yeah, at the last debate, you know, Hillary practically tied herself to Obama as a way to sort of differentiate herself from Sanders. And she was pointing out ways that Sanders had disagreed with Obama and blah, 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 which was a very interesting tactic on her part as well. It's interesting to see Sanders is also trying to do that at this point.
Well, I mean, inside Democrats, Obama has 80-90% approval. I mean, you know.
Right, within Democrats. Now, what Sanders has tried to tap into, though, are the group of people who support Obama but are disappointed at the results he's brought.
Yeah, because the results, because he did all these realistic things, because he, you know, he had these goals and he wound up like actually doing reality, all this stuff that you just talked about that Hillary, you don't want her to be talking about.
Well, and
it doesn't get people excited, but it's fucking reality.
Well, and as we've mentioned before, on Obama's side, if you actually start listing accomplishments he's had, you know, it may not be everything that left-wing Democrats wanted, but you can rattle off more accomplishments that he's actually gotten done than any other Democratic president since probably Truman or something.
Yes.
You know, he's done, he's did health care. He's reopened Cuba. He's got the Iran deal. He's got this. He's got that. He's got gay marriage. He's got
gay marriage.
You know, he has actually moved the needle quite a bit.
Bin Laden, for God's sakes. Oh, I mean, come on. You keep going on and on. Financial reform.
Right. And, you know, if you're a Republican, you may hate these things, but you can't deny he's actually moved the needle. He's gotten stuff done.
Yes.
And it's a completely different discussion whether you like those things or not.
Right.
But he has not been ineffective.
Right.
And same thing in foreign policy. You may not like the direction he's taken things, but he's moved things in a direction.
Yes.
And it's not just been him stumbling around. He has intentionally moved things in the direction he's moved them.
Correct.
You know, so I don't know. So just back to the Sanders thing. I think we agree. I mean, you know, even in the polls we were looking at, if you look at Iowa, you know, Sanders has made it a lot closer. He very, very briefly tied it up in Iowa. But, you know, Clinton's got a narrow lead again. You know, it's going to be somewhat close to a tie in Iowa, it looks like. And with Clinton probably slightly ahead. We'll see. Maybe Sanders will pull off an upset. In New Hampshire, we've all sort of already bought into, you know, the fact that, okay, Sanders is going to win New Hampshire. You know, it's been looking like that way for a long time, so it's not going to be a real shock. Well, I should put some notes on that. It's not going to be a shock to those of us who pay attention. To the group of people who aren't really paying attention to what's going on in politics until all of a sudden they see headlines that say Sanders won, you know, you may turn some heads at that point. And that's where, and especially if Sanders ends up winning both Iowa and New Hampshire, you're going to have like the freak out of all freak outs until we get to South Carolina, where everybody's talking about how Hillary's in trouble, how this, how that, blah, 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 blah. And then we're going to get to South Carolina, which, unlike both Iowa and New Hampshire, is not like, you know, 90% white. You know, and you're going to get beyond the core groups that Sanders has been appealing to, and you're going to get to some of the groups that he's been struggling with, and where Clinton is currently ahead in the polls by 40%. And, you know, Clinton's going to win South Carolina, and then she's going to start winning other states. And, you know, even and it, you know, Clinton's going to win.
Clinton's
gonna even win. If she loses both Iowa and New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Clinton's going to win.
Exactly.
The only way, and again, the only way that doesn't happen is if Hillary sabotages herself. And like we were saying, I think it's a big mistake for her to go super negative on Sanders. And that may backfire a little bit. There are other things that she could do. Like if she buys into the freak out and completely, like, you know, just starts being super negative herself on Sanders. I mean, this is exactly the things that people don't like about Hillary. You know, there's this perception of her that may or may not be fair. But when she starts bullying Sanders and throwing her weight around and throwing her money around to try to crush him, that's exactly the kind of thing that people don't like about the Clintons. And that could have a negative effect. So if you have her lose Iowa, her lose New Hampshire, and then her starting to act like that, she could accelerate the process of Sanders doing better as opposed to having the opposite effect. And then, of course, you've also got, you know, people... Yeah, we still got this simmering email crap in the background that for the most part nobody cares about, but you know, more things keep popping up. The latest is that there may have been material that was quote unquote beyond top secret being passed around in the unclassified email, and that Clinton may have, you know, actually encouraged that in some, whatever, you know,
whatever.
But, you know, it's just nothing so far is going to make a difference on the Democratic side with that.
No,
but there's always the possibility that something will come out, that some scandal, something that will derail her. You may even get the scenario with, you know, if Trump gets to the point where he thinks he's done with all the Republicans and he's got this all wrapped up, he's going to turn his attention more and more to Clinton, and he may damage her more as we even while she's still in the primary process. I mean, I implied last week that his attacks on her may have had something to do with the Sanders surge. I don't know if that's true or not, pure speculation, but, you know, he's shown a skill for that. So if he decides that he'd rather go up against Sanders in the general, you know, with the right Trump attacks against Clinton, maybe he could weaken her and cause something.
Wow, what a matchup in heaven! Oh, boy, jeez.
Sanders versus Trump.
Yeah, I know.
It would be an interesting matchup, and
By the way, here's the thing: I actually like Sanders. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I just don't agree with some of his ideas and some of the things he wants to do. But I actually like him. I mean, I don't.
I like Sanders. I actually, you know, a lot of what he says actually appeals to me a bit. You know, but you know, I also think that he'd be completely ineffectual as president.
Yeah, I totally agree.
He
as
wouldn't
well.
Get a damn no. thing done.
No, he wouldn't. So
he's also shown he is not particularly interested in the foreign policy part of things.
Right.
And come on, that's a big part of being president.
Agreed. So I really disdain Trump. I mean, the man is just loathsome. I mean, and I don't know if I talked about it on this show before. I mean, I never liked him even before he ran for fucking president. I mean, to me, the man, I found him just to be abhorrent because, he was, I go back to an article that happened in the 80s. It talked about Trump, what's behind the hype. He was just a hype machine. Always was, and he talked a lot, not a lot of substance behind anything he's ever said. That hasn't changed now. And I totally agree with a guy who made an analysis of a psychological analysis. Basically, he said he's just a fucking narcissist. I mean, in an extreme way and in a dangerous way at that.
Right.
So, anyway.
Oh, and one more thing on that. We'd said that there was no sort of big establishment anti-Trump thing. Apparently, National Review's next issue just came out.
Oh, my God, yes. It's a massive... I just saw that, too.
The cover is against Trump, and apparently the whole damn issue is all anti-Trump stuff.
Holy shit. I'm like, Jesus.
So maybe it's starting. Maybe it's starting.
Man, I was just shocked when I just saw that cover. I'm like, whoa.
And you've also seen, by the way, I mean, the Cruz people are trying to lead, we mentioned the Cruz versus Trump battle. I mean, a big part of that is they're trying to say how Trump isn't a real conservative. Trump's, in fact, a liberal, blah, 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 blah. We'll see what sticks and what doesn't. Of course, we're getting back on the Republicans. But, to finish up the Democrats, we may see a lot of noise and maybe this will last a little bit longer before people declare it to be over. But come on, Hillary's going to win. Hillary is going to win. I mean, Pratt, she's damn close to the margins that in 2008 led me to believe that she, it was over with Obama, where she got to the point where she needed 55% plus of the vote and of the remaining delegates, and Obama only needed 45%. Well, guess what? That's almost where we are already before a single delegate from an actual primary or caucus has happened because of the superdelegates. And so one of the things, and I before we do our next show, I will almost certainly have launched my delegate tracker stuff, cross my fingers, hopefully.
All right.
And wait, the one thing I want to say there is that, the thing to watch when we get to Iowa and when we get to all of those additional contests, Iowa, New Hampshire, whatever, is look at what I track as the percentage of the remaining delegates needed to win. Because, for instance, in Iowa, in order to be on a pace to catch up with Clinton, Sanders needs 54% of the delegates, not just 50. And if he doesn't get to 54, then at the next contest, when he gets to New Hampshire, he's going to need 55 or 56. And
He's done. Anyway, all right, look. Now that this National Review article came out, can I give you some juicy expert excerpts?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, first
we're
line.
We're back to the Republicans. Go ahead.
This line from Glenn Beck. When conservatives desperately needed allies in the fight against big government, Donald Trump didn't stand on the sidelines. He consistently advocated that your money be spent, that your government grow, and that your Constitution be ignored. First guy. Okay, all right. Second guy. Not since George Wallace has there been a presidential candidate who made racial and religious scapegoating so central to his campaign. Okay, that's the second guy. And it goes on and on and on. This is we were just talking about, that the conservatives hadn't gotten behind attacking this man. I mean, this is an attack dossier. I mean, this whole thing. I mean, oh my God. I mean, wow.
And so the thing is, I hear all that, but I'm still not convinced that the people who are supporting Trump right now are going to be swayed by that, because the people who are supporting Trump right now are not there because
they're
ideologically conservative. That's not why they're there.
Yeah. No, I get that. But the thing is that, remember, he doesn't have 50% of the votes.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So the second thing is that what you want to do is not so much get those guys off. What you want is to get the rest of them to stop fucking around and get somebody to fucking go against this asshole.
Right.
That's what you want. You don't want people to be, like you said before, that some, like, of the establishment are like, yeah, okay, we're going to deal with it. Fuck it. Maybe Trump. You know, that's what this looks like, okay, right now. I mean, the cover says it all. I mean, it's huge. I mean, it's like the whole fucking article. It's like, I mean, the whole magazine is just, you know, a broadside against Trump, like massive one.
Yeah, well, we'll see what it does. I mean, we've got 11 days till Iowa and a few more until New Hampshire. We'll see if...
I don't think the timing is a coincidence.
I don't think the timing is a coincidence either. And we've talked time after time again that, you know, there are a lot of people in both those states that don't make up their mind until the very last minute. And maybe folks like the National Review will make a difference at the very end here and bring people along. But the thing is, I think it has to, they have to knock down Trump. They also have to elevate one of these other guys.
Yeah, I agree.
Unless at this point the plan is the contested convention. If the plan is the contested convention, then, you know,
are we going to go there live?
Other options. But
if we're going to go there live,
that would be fun as hell. I don't think we could get credentials or whatever, but, you know.
I don't know. Maybe we can. We'll talk to Sarah Palin.
We'll just call up Sarah. She'll hook us up.
I'll get her on the horn. What the hell?
Okay.
All right.
I think we need to take a break. We'll do a quick lightning round, and, well, who knows how quick it'll be. But
anything can happen? It's okay. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back for the lightning round. Back after this.
Facebook, Facebook, Facebook!
Hey, do you want to help support Curmudgeon's Corner? Well, right now, the best way is through Facebook. If you haven't already liked us on Facebook and you actually, well, like us, then go search for Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook and like our page. It will help you see when we announce new episodes and it'll help us reach more new people too. If you like a particular episode, like our episode announcement post too, or share it with your friends. All of this helps spread the word about our podcast to more people who might like it as well. And of course, we love having a conversation with all of you listeners, so please use Facebook to leave comments on the shows, give us suggestions, or anything else like that. It's always great to hear from you. So, if you want to help the show, use Facebook. Or forget all of that and just send us money.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
I have stuff.
Anything else happen? I didn't know anything else happened.
There are a few things, and there's still some things to catch up on from the week.
Okay,
so,
all right.
So first of all, I neglected to mention last week, and I should have, because I mentioned something that happened after it. I watched another movie, and duh, I watched Star Wars, the Force Awakens, the new episode of Star Wars. I did go and see it on the day after Christmas. I liked it. I liked it. A lot of people have criticized it a little bit on being a little bit derivative of the earlier movies, but, you know, I didn't care. It was a fun little romp. Yes, it had a few bits that were like retreads of what happened in the existing movies, but frankly, that's what a lot of people went there to see. Yeah, they wanted to see the same kind of things they saw in the original movies. It's a nostalgia kind of thing. But with enough new elements in there to get you excited to watch the next one. And it certainly was a a crap load better than the train wreck of the original trilogy, the prequel trilogy, I should say, that George Lucas put out, 15 years ago or whenever it was. Worth seeing in the theaters as well.
George Lucas, the guy who now sells the whole thing, gets $4 billion, then realizes that, well, why the fuck did I sell it? I didn't really want to sell it. And then is like bitching and moaning. And I don't know if he's like sour grapes over he didn't get as much money as he should have. Well,
I think part of it is sour grapes over the fact that he made the prequel trilogy and everybody fucking hated them. And he sells them and somebody makes one and everybody's like, oh my God, this is awesome. This is what Star Wars should be. And he's like, God damn it, I created it. I know what Star Wars should be. It was what I did. The fact that you liked it, didn't like it, well, fuck you. I made it. And one of his first comments when he viewed the new one was, well, this will certainly give the fans what they wanted.
I heard it. It's like, I mean, talk about sour grapes, man. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. So whatever. It's in better hands now. He was always, especially in that prequel trilogy, there were two things that were there. One, he was obsessed with the technology that he wanted to play with more than he was about telling a good story. So it was all about trying out all these new methods and technologies and things like that. And okay, cool new special effects, cool new techniques, whatever. But when you're making a movie, that kind of stuff should be driven by what you're trying to show, not the other way around. And second, it became really fucking obvious. Not that this wasn't true to some extent in the earlier movies, especially after the first one, when it became a runaway, unexpected success. But it became really obvious that certain parts of the movie were there only for the purpose of driving sales of toys and games and things like that to go with it, like that like barely served a purpose in the plot, but it was just like, hey, let's throw this in there and then we can sell a toy around that.
And then the third
thing was his decision to he basically explicitly said that he wasn't making the movie for the people who loved the original movies. He was making it for the 6 and 7 year olds at the time he was releasing the movies. Hey, look, if you don't make their parents happy, they're not going to take their kids. they're going to be upset about it too, but whatever.
But my point is, what a lot of freaking sour grapes. I mean, from him, I mean, really, listen, you got $4 billion. Okay, you didn't have to sell it. You chose to.
Yep.
You chose who the fuck you sold it to, and then you're bitching and moaning about it. Get over it.
The other Star Wars thing, and I didn't even have this on my list, but I think it's worth mentioning too, is there's been a big controversy over, since we mentioned toys, the fact that essentially the main character in the new movie is named Rey, and she's female, and she's been conspicuously missing from the toy market. Not missing entirely, you can find her, but the toy companies apparently all made a very conscious effort to concentrate all of the toys and games and marketing and stuff that they were doing there on the male characters. And
male characters. The biggest, I went shopping to the Toys R Us and went to the Star Wars section. Yep. The biggest thing that was on sale was this little robot thing.
Oh yeah, BB-8. Yeah,
yeah. Honestly, that's what there was focused on. I didn't even know what the hell this BB-8 thing was.
But there are like box sets of characters from the movie that don't have her in them, and she's like the main character.
That's bizarre.
And there's all kinds of, there are leaks from inside, like the various toys companies saying, they're finger pointing back and forth at each other because this is sort of blown up as an issue with a lot of people, talking about where's Rey? Why isn't that she there? Why can I go to any toy store and pick up all these other characters, but I have to go hunting to get the Rey character? you know, and, you know, where there are leaks from inside it, where, first of all, the movie studios and the toy companies are pointing their finger at each other, saying it's the other guy's fault. But then there's also some leaks saying basically, like, there was a conscious thing that said, you know, hey, boys won't want to buy toys if they have a girl character in them. So we leave her out because we want the little boys to buy them. And, you know, the little girls can go over to their Barbies and stuff, you know, and
I you know what? Can I be honest? Look, I have no idea how boys buy toys. Or want, or like ask for them. I don't know. Do they have research that says that? I have no idea. I don't know.
Well,
they might
have some of it, but like the other part of it is, you know, there's a chicken and the egg scenario there in terms of how much is it really, you know, the boys avoiding that versus, you know, that's just what's put out there. You know,
I mean, I get that. I can't. I mean,
and I think culture is changing a lot. My son, you know, plays a lot of different games, and some of them have girl characters, and he doesn't think twice about playing with the girl characters.
I would have assumed that it wasn't. I wouldn't assume this was a big deal to have the girl character or not. I'm surprised that they think it's an issue. I'm thinking, look, these guys are trying to make money. I mean, you know, I don't think they're I'm guessing, you know, whether they think for some kind of reason. Okay. I mean, they're not, I mean, I'm most of these guys are looking just to make a couple of bucks, and I don't think it was some sexist issue. It was like, fuck, I mean, to take it out. And maybe it was a wrong assumption.
Right. Well, I mean, there's apparently a lot of institutional inertia in the toy industry.
That's what I would guess.
That there are girl toys, and there are boy toys.
Yeah.
And that you don't mix them up, and...
Yeah.
And boys don't want to play with girl action figures, and girls don't want to play with the little, you know.
But sometimes it's whatever. Parents too. I mean, I've heard a number of parents, like, you know, say those things when they're buying toys for their kids.
Oh yeah.
And look,
there's no question whatsoever. I mean, like, yeah, there are certain things. Yeah, there's always been this nature versus nurture thing about, like, but I've heard so many times from people who have worked really hard to, like, make sure they're, you know, all the toys are available to their kid. If their boy wants to play with dolls, that's fine. If their girl wants to play with a stereotypically boy toy, that's fine. And where the kids still gravitate to what they want to gravitate to. I mean, you know, my son is all about, like, the trucks and the vehicles and the trains, and a little bit less so now, but he was obsessed with those things, and they're stereotypically boy toys. And he couldn't care less about, like, you know, the girl toys. He would go right past that aisle, and not because, you know, we were discouraging him from going to that aisle. It wasn't interesting to him.
My son has this, like, insane interest with, I mean, I've got him all these, like, stuffed animals, toys, or whatever. What is he obsessed with? Trucks.
Right.
Trucks.
Yep.
I mean, he's obsessed with them. Loves the trucks. The bigger, the better. The noisier, the better. And I'm like, you know, we're having construction going on in our condo, like, right now, and he is just absolutely fascinated by all the big construction equipment.
Of course. It's at the same time, you go to it and say, okay, if you're going to make a combo pack of action figures from this movie, and you're going to include five characters, how does it make sense to leave out the main character of the movie, who the plot centers around what happens to her?
I get it. I get that.
One of the arguments was they left her out of some of this stuff because they didn't want to give away spoilers, because the fact that she was the main character wasn't something that they were putting in a lot of the marketing material beforehand. But well,
I could believe.
So that was one of the excuses that went back and forth. But then the movie companies are like, no, that's not true. She was in all the posters and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, certain things, like if you sold the toy with her holding a certain weapon, then you'd know that she held that weapon in the movie and blah, blah, blah. You know, things like that. But
I'm going to ascribe probably more inertia in the toy industry in like how they market stuff that more than anything else to this. I got to be honest with you.
Well, it's not necessarily saying somebody was outright malicious here, but they were definitely stupid.
It was just their thoughts of how things work because that's the way they've always done it.
And by the way, the result of this is that, you know, one of the characters was, you know, sort of the new bad guy in the movie, Kylo Ren, who's like, sort of like the next version of Darth Vader or whatever. Mm-hmm. They thought he would be the big character that everybody would want. Okay. Uh-huh. And apparently there's now a glut of those toys and nobody fucking wants them. But meanwhile, everybody's going into the stores going, where's Rey? I want the Rey character. I want this. And they run out all the time because they're not that many of them out there. You know, and meanwhile, I'm like, really? You thought Kylo Ren was going to be the big exciting one? Because I looked at the movie, and by the way, not really a spoiler, but kind of. So if you're sensitive, go forward a couple minutes. Like, Kylo Ren is a big whiny baby who's trying to be Darth Vader. Okay? Okay. You know, the original Darth Vader, everybody wanted him because he was a fucking badass.
Okay? Oh, yeah. He was a big ass badass.
Darth Vader came into a room and took control, and you knew, like, he had a huge presence there.
He was like the Trump of the movie.
There you go. Kylo Ren is a fucking whining wannabe. Okay? Nobody would go see that movie and be like, ooh, Kylo Ren, I want him. He's so like...
Like the, you're saying he's like more like the Jeb Bush of the movie, basically, is what you're saying.
Okay, yeah, kinda, you know? But yeah, I mean, like, he's just
the whiny little...
He's not somebody... Like, you could see, like, even though Darth Vader's a bad guy, because he's a badass, everybody's like... You can see people wanting to pretend to be Darth Vader. Because he... He's... Because he's cool, right? Kylo Ren is not cool. Kylo... You want to slap him.
Okay.
You're not going to have everybody want to be this guy. They're going to want to slap him.
Well, I haven't watched a movie yet, and I will not watch it for a while. I'm not going to be upset about spoilers. So whatever. All right. Okay. I'll see it when it comes out on video or some sort. And probably not even when it comes out, like right away. It'll take me a while.
Yeah. So we just talked a long time about fucking Star Wars.
Okay, I think we're done.
Okay. Well, I'll save.
All right. Let's try.
It's fine. It's fine. I can save. Nothing else is really like time critical, or it's already old. So fuck it. We don't have to talk about it. We'll move on. We'll wrap up the show now, and we'll undoubtedly have another lightning round some other time, and I will mention other stuff.
Okay. All right. Maybe the election will be over soon enough. Not.
Yeah. No. This is going on fucking forever. and we'll be talking about whether or not a third party will be in. We'll be talking about the contested conventions. We're going to be undoubtedly talking about the...
We're going there live!
We're going to be talking about, is Hillary in trouble for the next month or so? You know, all this stuff. You know, it's going to be exciting. It's, you know, you'll have all the twists and turns and excitement and yeah. And I would say, and in the end, it's all going to work out the way everybody expected from the beginning. But when you've got Donald Trump in here, who the fuck knows?
Exactly right.
And with that, that's a show. Thank you all for listening. As usual, go find us on Facebook. We're at Curmudgeon's Corner. take, you know, go there, like us, comment, tell us what you think about the show. You can find us on Twitter as well. I'm Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne is I-M-B-O-U. And we love to hear from you. Go to iTunes and review our show. We love it when you do
yes,
that as well.
Please.
We did get one comment on our Facebook post last week saying that both of us should go watch or listen to an episode of the Freakonomics podcast on how to be less terrible at making predictions. I have not listened to
it. I gotta be honest with you. We're pretty good, fucking good at making predictions. Okay, so you know what? Freakonomics could go suck it.
Freakonomics is a pretty decent podcast, though.
It is a pretty decent podcast. But what I'm saying is, I don't think we need additional help on our predictions. I think that, you know what? I am going to try to make a point
of listening to that episode anyway and see what it says. I was going to try to do it before today's show, but I got caught up in other things, so it didn't happen. Anyway, we love to hear your comments and questions, and please interact with us. We love that. And, of course, tell your friends to listen to. We love new listeners. And that's it. Thanks for listening. Everybody have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.